Yes, sir, it's your boy, Big Vern. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. You heard?
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we will hear from Shelley Hegan, president and CEO of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, about the Supreme Court's striking down the abortion law, and now abortion is not legal in all states across the country. And she'll explain what that means to New Yorkers and people around the country. And we'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
Sunday, July 3rd, world-renowned harpist Mary Lattimore performs at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock at 8 p.m., and you can find out all about the event on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Lattimore has played harp on records with Kurt Vile, Thurston Moore, Sharon Van Etten, Meg Baird, and many others, and comes from Los Angeles to Woodstock on Sunday, July 3rd at the Colony Cafe at 8 p.m. Go to WGXC.org in the community calendar to find out more about this event and many others.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Steve Hughes reports for the Times Union that Albany's good cause eviction law, the first of its kind in the state, was struck down on June 30th in a decision that may lead to the overturning of similar laws statewide. State Supreme Court Judge Christina Riba ruled in favor of several landlords who argued that the law violated a state law that guided tenant-landlord relationships. Riba's decision eliminated one of Mayor Kathy Sheehan's signature pieces of legislation, part of a larger package of housing-related laws that was lauded by housing advocates as a model for other cities to follow. Advocates of good cause eviction legislation argue that they prevent predatory rent hikes and give tenants greater power in lease negotiations. Landlords take the position the laws are essentially rent control and infringe on individual property rights. Benjamin Nadel, the attorney for landlord plaintiffs, said, quote, "In Albany, this decision will restore the balance of rights between tenants and landlords as current state law intends," unquote. Sheehan's office released a statement saying it was, quote, deeply disappointed, unquote, by the ruling and are reviewing all options available. The legislation, as passed by the Albany Common Council a year ago, had several components, including a requirement that landlords could not evict or refuse to renew a lease with a tenant unless they met one of 10 possible conditions, including ongoing failure to pay rent and causing a property to be deemed a nuisance. It also included language that limited rent increases to 5%, with some exceptions. A good cause bill in the state legislature has repeatedly failed to advance. The city of Hudson Common Council in 2021 passed a local law to prevent eviction without cause. That measure was later vetoed by Mayor Kamal Johnson. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Not only like the subject reports at Capital Region Independent Media, the Coeymans officials want to build a new $6 million town hall, but some residents are not so sure the time is right. A handful turned out to question the project at a June 23rd public hearing. Town Supervisor George McHugh said town reserves would pay for half the project and a 25-year bond would cover the rest. Ravenna resident Laszlo Polyak asked, and I quote, "I've been advocating for a new town hall for about 20 years, but sometimes it is timing, and I'm wondering, can we afford to do it now with inflation going through the roof and the cost of construction going through the roof? Might it be better to delay this for a while until we see which way the economy is going? I don't see why not, but I would love to see it on the waterfront," end quote. Resident Bob Williams is a member of the Village Planning Board, but said he was speaking on his own here. Williams said, and I quote, "I guess I do feel the same as some of the other residents here, the timing and the cost. Costs are through the roof right now. Materials are hard to get and very expensive. I just think you should look at the timing," end quote. Daniel Boomer wondered if the project was going to happen no matter what anyone said. Boomer said, and I quote, "I think it is fiscally irresponsible at this time. However, it appears to be a done deal, and I thank you for allowing us to come down and talk. Perhaps we could have some input on the color of the curtain. Other than that, it all seems like a done deal," end quote. McHugh said the project is still a proposal. McHugh said, and I quote, "This hearing is starting tonight, but it's not ending tonight. We are going to continue it through July 14th, so anybody out there who is watching on the live stream that didn't come tonight, feel free to come July 14th or email or mail in your comments or suggestions," end quote. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that the delivery rates for Central Hudson and Gas Electric Corp. will increase July 1st, despite calls by top state and Ulster County lawmakers to stop them. The utility said the new rates, approved by the Public Service Commission as part of a three-year plan in November, will go into effect as planned. The plan includes another increase in delivery charges a year from now in July 2023. In May, Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, State Senator Michelle Hinchey, and Assemblymember Kevin Cahill penned a letter to the Public Service Commission requesting the commission stop the utility's rate increase in July. Ryan, Hinchey, and Cahill argued the commission should restrict any increases until its investigation into the utility's billing practice was completed. Central Hudson has been under fire for billing complaints and skyrocketing customer bills. The Public Service Commission, as well as the State Senate Committee, are investigating those matters. Joseph Jenkins, a Central Hudson spokesperson, said the delivery rate increase will adhere to the PSC approvals. Quote, "Under the approved delivery rate plan and based on market prices for electricity and natural gas as of July 2021, total average residential electric bills using 640 kilowatt hours per month will decrease by 0.25% in the first year," unquote, Jenkins said in an email. Quote, "Total average residential natural gas bill using 870 cubic feet per year will increase by 1.2%, or about $1.64 per month during the first year," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that New York law enforcement officials have seized 98% more illegal guns in the first 6 months of 2022 than last year. Governor Kathy Hochul said on June 29th that through June, law enforcement has seized 662 illegal guns. Vogel said, and I quote, we are aggressively ramping up our effort to get deadly weapons, including ghost guns, off of our streets, and have developed hundreds of investigative leads spanning 22 states, work resulting in the first discernible reduction in gun violence in more than 2 years, end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, while this is undeniable progress, our work is just getting started, end quote. Gun seizures outside of New York City increased 94% this year compared to 2020, and were 40% higher since 2021. State lawmakers started an extraordinary session June 30th to address the Supreme Court's recent ruling allowing citizens to carry concealed weapons in the state. So the issue is definitely being discussed in Albany. Read more about this story at New York State of Power.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that the City of Hudson's seasonal usage program will return for the third consecutive year, and plans are being finalized to install concrete barriers along Warren Street. The barriers and accompanying planters will expand outdoor seating for restaurants and cafes on Warren between Front and 7th Streets. Quote, the Hudson Business Coalition is still collecting the funds and the permit documentation, unquote, Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson said on June 28th. Quote, it's looking like hopefully sometime next week it'll be kicking off, unquote. Alexandra Petrigali, president of the Hudson Business Coalition, said the organization does not have a specific date for the installation of the concrete barriers, which will also allow restaurants to expand their footprint into parking spaces in front of their businesses until early October. Petrigali said the 20 Hudson businesses have so far signed up, with only food and drink establishments eligible to participate this year. The program requires that establishments stipulate that 4 feet of clear sidewalk space measured from the curb be kept clear for pedestrians, and that fire hydrants, active fire lanes, and handicapped parking spaces remain clear as well. The Hudson Business Coalition has been filing the permit applications with the Hudson Police Department and informing the Hudson Department of Public Works about the number of businesses that are signing up. DPW is responsible for installing the barriers. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that the town of Durham held its second annual community town meeting June 11th outside at Brandel Memorial Park. Bernard Rivers, chairperson of Durham Connect, said, and I quote, the comprehensive plan recommended that the town should hold an annual meeting to present each annual report and provide an opportunity for a community discussion about it. The meeting is just a chance for residents and officials to meet and hear from each other, end quote. Rivers, Town Supervisor Sean Marriott, and Town Councilperson Joan Breslin led the meeting. Marriott's recent quote in the town's annual report dominated the conversation. Marriott said he wanted to make it clear that he welcomes everyone. He said in the report, and I quote, the issue of newcomers is still extremely polarizing in our town. It has gotten worse in the last few months. We need to find a way to strike a balance with welcoming new people into our community and protecting our core values and way of life. We have to strike some way of being able to get along, end quote. He added, and I quote, it's a polarizing topic because you get people who are very adamant in both directions. I do my best to remain neutral, end quote. But residents kept the newcomers versus old-timers issue going. Mary Ann Lita, the only citizen quoted in the story, said, and I quote, if you're going to move to an area, you should maybe find out something about it, about the culture of that area, so you don't get angry when the guy next door is target shooting, so you know the rules, you can target shoot, but not near a house, end quote. Residents also brought up broadband access and roadside trash, but did not mention the proposed BOSS housing development that dominated discussion at town meetings for the past year. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, mostly sunny and hot, with a temperature high near 90 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy, with a temperature low of around 68 degrees. And on Saturday, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 2 p.m. Then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature high near 81 degrees. And Saturday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 60 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Friday, July 1st, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air, WGXC 90.7 FM, including at noon. Jared Wiggishud is live from the WGXC Hudson studio with the Sugar Shack Jukebox, 2 hours of funk, R&B, rock, pop, psych, soul, reggae, hip-hop, and more, often brand new music just released. At 4 p.m., we're live from ACRA with the WGXC Afternoon Show, and it's the monthly time for the Conduction Series, a group of improvisers from around the world experimenting on the WGXC airwaves, beaming in from Boulder, Colorado, Santa Cruz, California, Buffalo, New York, Vancouver, Canada, and elsewhere. Tune in for that in the first hour of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Then we hear from local teenagers. First, the Clubhouse Radio Show is on at 6 p.m., live from Main Street and Catskill, and then at 7 p.m. it's time for Bound by Books with Hudson teens talking about what they've been reading on the radio. We hear local music at 8 p.m. with Hudson Valley Sounds, and then it's time for Guy Welchek's Guy and Friends show with Club Techno House and more on the radio at 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Sunday, July 3rd. World-renowned harpist Mary Lattimore performs at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock at 8 p.m., and you can find out all about the event on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Lattimore has played harp on records with Kurt Vile, Thurston Moore, Sharon Van Etten, Meg Baird, and many others, and comes from Los Angeles to Woodstock on Sunday, July 3rd at the Colony Cafe at 8 p.m. Go to WGXC.org in the community calendar to find out more about this event and many others.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Oh, Helios. Oh, yellow star. Oh, glowing sphere. Gleaming beacon. Brilliant flaming orb. Giver of light, warmth, and radio. Yes, it's true. WGXC's brand new solar panels are installed and ready for deployment, where they'll be calling on the free and plentiful rays of the sun to bring our station close to full sustainability.
To make WGXC a solar-powered radio station.
We are going solar, and WGXC will be a solar-powered community radio station, getting our power from the sun rather than foreign despots.
WGXC loves the sun, and we're going to love it even more now that WGXC is going solar.
Hello, and welcome to the better weather for Friday, July 1st. Early AM temperatures range from 61 degrees in Halcott Center to 65 in Athens. Soil temperature is 68 degrees. Those cool morning temperatures disappear by 11 a.m. and we will see a high of 92 happen at 2 p.m. That will linger around until 5 p.m. The hot afternoon turns stormy around 7 p.m. And it's going to stay that way all night as we reach a low of 69 degrees. The dew points in the mid-60s will keep it feeling humid. Saturday, the stormy conditions remain all day and we will see a high of 84 at 3 p.m. Early Sunday morning, things dry out and we see a low of 62 before bouncing back up to 84 Sunday afternoon, which should be nice and dry. Then, some comfortable sleeping weather overnight in the 50s will take us into a clear and dry Independence Day with a high of 84. Pollen levels for today will be medium, and it will be low on Saturday and returning to medium on Sunday into Monday. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 5 a.m., low tide at 12:04 p.m., high tide again at 5:55 p.m., then low tide once again at 11:52 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees. For the weekend listeners, here are the Rip Van Winkle Sandbar appearance times. Saturday, 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., with tide speed being average. Saturday night, 10:40 p.m. into 1:40 a.m. Sunday, it will be around, and then it shows back up again from 11:20 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tide speed will be light. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see an Earth-facing coronal hole is releasing plasma due to collide with us next Wednesday. Solar wind speed is currently 328 kilometers per second at 2.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 40. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to the test site of Acoustic Commons, available at wavefarm.org/listen. Or on any WGXC.org webpage if you click on the Listen button. The test site of Acoustic Commons is a microphone in the Wave Farm woods that lets you overhear the sounds of nature, the live weather, on the radio at wavefarm.org/listen, or click on any WGXC.org webpage. Click on the Listen button to hear the sounds in the woods at Wave Farm through the test site of Acoustic Commons.
Just what is it that you want to do?
Well, we want to be free. We want to be free to do what we want to do. We want to be free to ride. And We want to be free to ride our machines without being hassled by the man.
There's a whole lot of people in the house trying to smoke with the yak in your mouth. And we back outside. You said you outside, but you ain't that outside. Worldwide hoodie with the mask outside. In case you forgot how we act outside.
In a 6-3 decision on Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, diminishing the agency's ability to regulate power plant emissions under the Clean Air Act. Some see the ruling in West Virginia versus EPA as a setback for efforts to minimize the effects of climate change. But Jason Albritton, the Nature Conservancy's Director of U.S. Climate and Energy Policy, feels there are still ways to meet the nation's 2030 goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 50%.
There's no one thing that the U.S. can do to solve the climate challenge and to meet our Paris commitment. Executive action is still needed. It may be harder in light of this decision, but there are still a lot of tools in the federal government, in executive agencies, in environmental protection agencies, and others to deal with climate change.
Albritton feels action is needed from Congress to address climate change and for states like New York to continue leading the charge to curb it. Part of the state's clean energy standard is to get 70% of its power from renewable resources like wind and solar by 2030. The new decision could be a hurdle in making it happen on time. Attorney Sean Donahue adds the court ruling is unusual because it even defies what many power companies said they want, which is to move towards renewable energy. Donahue, who represented several organizations that were respondents in the case, called the energy industry's show of support for the EPA's case remarkable.
None of the regulated entities, power companies, sought review of the lower court's decision. They, in fact, supported it. They were on the side of the Biden EPA in the case, urging the court to uphold the lower court's decision, uphold the broader vision of EPA's authority.
One such organization that came to the side of the EPA is the Edison Electric Institute, which represents all investor-owned electric companies in the U.S. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you, Shelley Hegan, President and CEO of Upper Hudson Plant Parenthood, for coming on to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. As our listeners are well aware, last week the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. What does that mean?
Well, it means that as of Friday evening, there were 6 states where abortions became instantly illegal. And it means over the course of this summer, there will probably be between 13 and 20 more. And by the time we get to the end of the calendar year, in all likelihood, 26 states will have either banned abortion outright or curtailed it to the point that it is not accessible for most people. And that is devastating for all of us and for what it means for us at Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, where we have health centers in Albany, Troy, and Hudson. We have to get to work to be ready to expand access to abortion as much as we possibly can so that we can stand ready to support people coming from wherever they might come from.
How does this decision create even greater inequity in our society?
Well, you know, we can look back to 1970, right? What New York State made abortion legal in 1970, Roe passed in 1973. And what we know is that wealthy women, wealthy white women, were able to access abortion by traveling between states, by hopping on a plane to Puerto Rico, by going to Mexico, by going to Europe. They were able to access the abortions that they wanted. But low-income people, people of color, undocumented people, indigenous people were unable to make those kind of moves. And so they were unable to access abortion if they needed it. They were unable to control the size of their families, their ability to stay in school, their ability to stay in the workforce, their ability to just pursue the lives that they had planned for themselves. And it was devastating. When Roe passed, suddenly people were able to make decisions for themselves. And it really changed everything. We can see the statistics are very clear about the level of involvement in the economy and the number of college graduates who are female has just continuously risen ever since Roe. And that's really what we're looking at now, is there are going to be people who can access abortion, and for them it may become inconvenient, but much will not have changed. And then there's going to be large groups of people throughout the middle of the country and throughout the South that will completely lose access. And one of the things that is shocking to me when I look at the map and I sort of overlay the map of the states that decided to take up Medicaid expansion, we have states that have declined Medicaid expansion. They have among the lowest educational attainment in their states. They have terrible health outcomes. They have high maternal mortality rates. They have high infant mortality rates, all of which primarily affect poor people, rural people, Black and brown people. And those are the places where they're now also going to take away abortion as an option for people. We also know that delivery and forced deliveries are more dangerous than abortion. So if you are living in a state that has really abysmal maternal mortality rates, you're being asked to take risks with your health that you didn't want to take. It is stunning to me, and it seems completely un-American.
The coat hanger is an image that is often brought up, but it's a bit outdated. Now we have pills and different types of technologies. So what are the dangers that people who seek abortions might be choosing now? And what can you tell us about the availability of different types of pills?
So you're right. That sort of 1970s image of the coat hanger is horrific, and we all know what it means. I would not be so quick to say that people will not resort to that again. I definitely know from my colleagues in Texas who have already been facing these levels of bans that their call centers are frequently talking to people on the phone saying, okay, I'm standing in my pantry and my cleaning supplies are X, Y, and Z. What can I use? So people are still resorting to non-medically sound self-induced abortions. And that's dangerous, and we should all be really worried about that. I think as far as what we do have now, you're absolutely right. The medication abortion has been transformative in terms of people being able to manage their own abortion care. And here in New York State, I would say we started doing medication abortions at Upper Hudson right around the time they were becoming available. And we now, I would say, 2/3 of the abortions we provide are medication abortion and 1/3 are in-clinic procedural abortions. People appreciate the privacy of it. They appreciate being able to have their abortion take place at home. And in the case of New York, they're doing it under some level of medical supervision. It's very non-invasive, but still they have to access the medication through a provider. So there is someone who they have to talk to, which we find our patients really do appreciate. People will be accessing, and I know they already are, accessing medication abortion pills online and through international sources. Certainly, we would want to make sure that they're having access to the most reputable sources as possible. You know, there's of course the risk in places where abortion is not only going to become illegal but criminalized, that if people get pills that are from unreputable sources and those pills don't work and they end up in the hospital, then you're talking about people being arrested for attempted abortions. So the self-managed abortion comes with risks in those states, but I do think that it will save a lot of lives. Medication abortion will save a lot of lives.
So could you walk us through what does it mean to use an abortion pill?
Sure. So the medication abortion protocol that we use requires 2 sets of pills, and I think it's 12 hours apart. I can't remember how many hours in between. So the patient will typically come into the clinic, although there are opportunities to do it via telehealth and then come to the clinic to just pick up their meds and go home. So they may or may not have a face-to-face visit with a provider. And the provider will identify when their last menstrual period was, and provided they know when that was, they will be able to tell how many weeks it's been, and you can have a medication abortion up to 11 weeks after your last menstrual period. So if it's in that time range, they will be given two pills that they take buccally, which means like you put them in between your cheek and gum and they dissolve. And the patient then goes home with the other set of pills after the period of time. They go home and then they take the second set of pills in the same way. The first set of pills essentially ends the pregnancy, and the second set of pills expels the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So when they leave our office, they're technically not pregnant anymore, but they still are retaining the products of conception. Those leave the body after the second set of pills. In terms of follow-up care, we typically like to talk to the patient to make sure that they're doing okay, that their bleeding isn't excessive, and also to make sure that they're feeling well in general. We do recommend people take a pregnancy test afterwards at a certain point to make sure that they're no longer pregnant. But it is not an enormous amount of aftercare required. Now, if someone comes to us and they don't know when their last menstrual period was, then in the health center, we're able to do a ultrasound to identify if there are products of conception and how large it is. And that is an indicator. They can at that point tell what the gestational age of the embryo is, and they can decide whether or not the person is eligible for a medication abortion, and then have a conversation with them about what method is best for them.
Would it be possible for somebody to take this pill in one of the states where it's illegal and safely do so without any legal risk?
I would say that there's always going to be risk, and I wouldn't want to tell anybody otherwise. Already, women are arrested for miscarriages. Women are arrested for endangering the life of a fetus for taking drugs when they're pregnant. So there's already a criminalizing of pregnant people that happens in this country before Roe was overturned. Now that Roe has been overturned and we're going to start penalizing and criminalizing people with these cruel laws, there's always going to be a risk. I don't want to say that like scaring people's pants off or anything, but I just think it's really important that people recognize that there are going to be risks involved. To your question, if someone presented in a hospital because maybe they were having excessive bleeding or feeling pain or something like that, that they were unsure of what was going on with their medication abortion, it would most typically present as a miscarriage. If someone didn't say, I'm in the middle of having a medication abortion, the person, the medical professional meeting them would assume that they were having a miscarriage, because that's most likely how it would look. But that is one of the things that these states are going to be looking for.
So we're based in New York. We have the fortune of still having access to abortion. Do you know of any networks that are being built here? What are some things that we can do here to support people who don't have this access?
I mean, I don't know personally of what the underground networks that are going to be developing or maybe already have are. I'm certainly, you know, I listen to all the podcasts and I'm like completely swimming in what folks are doing around the country. So there are certainly networks that are going to build up. The reality is at this moment in time, it is illegal to send medication abortion from New York to another state. So we can't do that legally. That doesn't mean it's not being done, and it doesn't mean that people in other states should despair that they have no way of access, because I'm certain there are other ways. Where we are in terms of what Upper Hudson's role in this sort of new post-Roe world is we need to maintain our ability to provide in-clinic abortion services and medication abortion services here in New York. We cannot jeopardize our providers' licenses because so many people are depending upon us to be here for them. I think for some people traveling from out of state, and we just recently hired an abortion navigator so that we have people on site who can help get people here if they need to get here, get them hotel rooms, rides, childcare, all that kind of stuff. Some people will choose to come to a state like New York and have an in-clinic abortion so that they leave here unpregnant. so that they limit that risk of leaving here and having something happen back home. We are going to be making sure that people take their second set of pills in New York, because we don't want to send people away and have that risk lying over their heads or the risk of our providers, because it would be their license on the line. But we're in no way getting in the way of other people doing other things. So, you know, I heard a fabulous podcast about the network in Mexico, and they moved medication abortion around, and that for years it was just sort of operating under the law.
And they were often using ulcer pills.
Right. And I think the ulcer pills are similar to what the mifepristone is that we use. So that's been around for a long time. There are many countries that have the same drug available over the counter for that they use for different things. It's not a common treatment here, so it's not as common in the over the counter space. In 1970, there were things like the Jane Collective, where everyday people learned how to perform suction abortions and were doing those, you know, in apartments. There were clergy all over the place moving women around that needed to get moved around who didn't have the money to do it. So there's going to be roles for lots of people depending upon what role they feel the best taking on. And some of that is going to be outside of the law, and some of it is going to be inside of the law, and some of it's going to be in a gray, mushy area on the other side. And I think we all have to kind of respect that different people are going to have to do different things, as long as first and foremost the safety of our patients is always kept in mind. I feel like we're going to see a lot of things happen in the coming years, and we don't know what that's going to look like.
I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. Shelley Hegan, President and CEO of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Yeah, I'm on. This is your one and only Mr. Perry. With fainting soul, but thirst for grace, I wander in a desert place. I'm at the crossing of the way. I saw a six-fold seraph blaze. He touched my eyes with finger light. I sleep that comet in the night. And like a frightened eagle eyes, they open wide with prophecy. He touched my ears and they were drowned with two mouths and a roaring sound. Confusion in the sky, and flight of angels post on high, and beasts that move beneath the sea, and they stop creeping in the tree, and bending to my mouth, they rang from out of it my sinful tongue, and all is light, and I trust. I twist my lips, a perishing a subtle serpent fought sting, with my right hand wet with blood he thrust. Ash calabash. My breath
he pled, my quaking heart there out he wept, and in the yawning of my breast, a coal of living fire fresh. Then in the desert I lay dead, and God called unto me and said, arise and let my voice be heard, charged with my will, go forth and span the land and sea, and let my word lay waste with fire the heart of man forever and ever.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I am pleased to welcome Justice Jackson to the court and to our common calling.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson was sworn in as the newest justice of the Supreme Court Tuesday by Chief Justice John Roberts. Jackson, who's replacing outgoing Justice Stephen Breyer, is the first Black woman to serve on the nation's high court. Jackson's final confirmation capped off a packed final day of the court's term. The court significantly hindered the federal government's ability to fight climate change. In a 6-3 decision, they restricted the Environmental Protection Agency's capacity to regulate air pollution from power plants. In a conversation hosted by the left-leaning American Constitution Society, Kirti Dhatla, director of strategic legal advocacy for Earth Justice, said the decision could limit the EPA from taking other regulatory actions.
The court has taken what is the most effective way to reduce emissions from the largest source of energy-related greenhouse gas emissions off the table.
The court also ruled 5-4 to strike down former President Donald Trump's stay in Mexico immigration policy, which compelled asylum seekers to remain on the Mexican side of the border while their asylum claims were processed. The Biden administration had sought to end the policy, and the ruling was a rare win for Democrats in the current Supreme Court session. The justices agreed to take up a case in their next term, which could dramatically expand state legislatures' authority to regulate federal elections. A decision which could dramatically impact the 2024 presidential election will come down next year. Meanwhile, speaking at the NATO summit in Spain, President Joe Biden endorsed a narrow filibuster carve-out to pass abortion rights through Congress.
The most important thing to be clear about is I believe we have to codify Roe v. Wade in the law, and the way to do that is to make sure the Congress votes to do that.
To do so would require buy-in from all 50 Democrats in the chamber, including Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who've been entrenched opponents of filibuster reform. At the summit, Biden also announced the U.S. will be providing an additional $800 million in military aid to Ukraine to combat the Russian invasion. Back at home, Representative Liz Cheney, a Wyoming Republican and vice chair of the January 6th committee, this week referred to former President Donald Trump as a, quote, domestic threat.
And he is aided by Republican leaders and elected officials who've made themselves willing hostages to this dangerous and irrational man.
Republicans affiliated with Cheney's moderate branch of the GOP faced tough primary elections this year. A new analysis by Politico found an average incumbent House Republican locked in 88% of the vote in primary elections in 2018. That dropped to 62% this year for incumbent Republicans who've supported the January 6th committee. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Earlier this week, we mentioned that the Missouri legislature had passed an omnibus and ominous voting and election bill, and that pro-voter groups and election officials were not happy with the additional barriers to voting and burdens to election workers. That bill was signed Wednesday by Republican Governor Mike Parson. Sponsors of the bill hailed the provision to implement a voter ID requirement common among many states, but they limited the allowable ID to only state or federal IDs, not the commonly accepted options such as student IDs or other institutional documents. The state of Missouri charges for non-driver IDs, a barrier to low-income voters. Changes to current law will allow no-excuse absentee ballot voting for a 2-week period prior to the election, but only in person, not by mail. Disabled and elderly voters would be forced to come into election offices to vote during this period. The bill also bans third-party assistance with voter registration, restricting groups like the League of Women Voters and other pro-voter groups from helping voters register. Nor can groups facilitate absentee voting. Election officials voiced concerns over the potential disruption of Election Day auditing and the banning of private grants to offset the costs of elections, which, like most of these new restrictions, were based on false claims of widespread voter fraud. Links to more information on this restrictive Missouri bill and groups taking action are at our website, AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Not too stupid, intelligible, and cute as Cupid. Knowledgeable, but not always right. Salvageable, and free for the night. Well, my heart's running round like a chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love. The poor thing's blind as a bat, getting up, falling down, getting fall in love with a chicken with its head cut off. Whoa, Nelly. My wife doesn't understand me. Many dozens hope to land me. I'm for free love and I'm in free fall. This could be love or nothing at all. But my heart's running round like a chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love.
enough for